This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a deacon and trustee seminar held on July 15, 2025 in Millersburg, Ohio.
I've had a very interesting day. I've been strongly encouraged, a lot of inspiration, and one of my challenges to start speaking now is to not just comment on everything I've heard already this forenoon. It's been very, very interesting and a lot of food for thought, and to share the podium here with some of the speakers we've had so far, I'll share one thought that crossed my mind. Andy Miller was ordained deacon before I was born, so I don't feel quite adequate to even be speaking here today. So anyhow, my topic today, handling knowledge discreetly, and I want to get started into that. I got a ways to go here, and I want to stay on course here and not spend a lot of time talking about other stuff as much as I'd like to. So I keep asking myself this question. We, as a planning committee, I was asked to be involved in planning this meeting, and we had a lot of discussion into what topics are we going to speak about. And so how did we get why is there such a need for some of these topics? And I don't think there's much question into that if life has thrown some experiences our way, I think we can answer that question. But I have to ask myself, you know, how much could be obtained by simply containing knowledge more discreetly, or not having what all are our churches losing out on? And I'm talking specifically about the Anabaptist churches. We function the way we do as close-knit communities, close-knit, you know, our neighbors are our fellow church members in a lot of cases, and sometimes we're our own worst enemy. You know, close-knit is one of the values we really cherish. It's who we are. It's part of our identity. But at the same time, if we're not handling knowledge discreetly, if we're not you know, keeping things to ourselves that we should, or we're telling stories, or the church is the newsroom, what could be obtained if we could have victory over some of that? And I think it's a lot. So I'm hoping to get into that a little bit and just share some. I'm not a speaker that has the ability to dig into Scripture a lot like some people have that gift. I'm more the type that shares experiences I've had, or stories, or things like that. So bear with me a little bit, but I got some things to share that you know pertain to this topic that I'd like to get into. So first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming out. You know, I was in this building a couple years ago, and it was so packed it was standing room only. And I'm getting in a little deep here if I say this. I'm the first to admit I'm an avid outdoorsman, but it was a hunting seminar. And this building was packed, you know, and I'm looking over the crowd today, and we have a nice crowd. We appreciate everyone that's come out, but at the same time, I know that there are several hundred deacons in this community who did not show up today. I'm not being critical or judgmental about that, but I want to express my thanks to you all. Deacons, trustees, whatever your role is that you're here today, for taking it seriously enough to take the time, a day out of the week, to attend and see how we can improve. That's the backbone of our community. So I really want to express my appreciation for everyone that's here, and especially for the wives that attended too. We do appreciate that. I had some thoughts to share about deacons' wives, but last night I ran it by my wife, and after giving a little bit of thought, she said, "Wouldn't you have enough other stuff to talk about without getting into that?" So we're moving on. So how well am I doing? This is just a question we have to honestly ask ourselves, and I just made a couple of bullet points for myself, and I'm just sharing it with y'all. In the last 6 months, how many people have shared information that they would be horrified to find out that you are telling others? Do you have to be told to not share it with others, or do people have enough confidence in your character that they trust you with personal information? You know, one thing that I've found for myself is if people share discreet knowledge and don't ask me to not tell it, I'm actually more motivated to keep it confidential sometime than if they say, now don't tell anyone this. And why is that so? And my thinking is, in a lot of cases, if someone's telling me something, they're saying, now don't repeat it, they're probably telling a dozen other people the same thing. Don't repeat it, don't repeat it, but they're going around telling people. So it's things like that that I think I'm inspired to do better. I do have a job based in the community here where I have a lot of conversations with people, and it's interesting. Sometimes I might be directly involved in a situation, let's say it's an accident or something, and maybe, you know, I'm directly involved with the situation, I'm talking with the family members, and then Sunday in church, I hear other people telling about it, and there might be some missing information, some misinformation, and a lot could, I might be able to add a lot to it, but at what point do you do that just to show that you know more about it than they do, or do you choose to just be quiet? So that's the type of questions we need to really honestly ask ourselves. What is our motive in sharing information? What are we trying to accomplish? What is our purpose? So, I'm getting in over my head here with some of this. When I was asked to be on the planning committee here, I was thinking about setting up chairs and things like that, and now to have a speaking part is not quite what I signed up for. But at the same time, I've learned. I'm a work in progress. I'm growing in this. I want to continue doing that. And if I can share something that's of value to anyone here, I certainly want to do that. So, sometimes we learn from extreme examples. I just made note of this when I heard this conversation, but how many people here would confess to listening to the Amish and Mennonite conference line occasionally? Just curious. Interesting. I enjoy it better than reading the budget, to be honest about it, but it's interesting what all gets said on there. But I didn't hear this myself, but I was told about a conversation that was overheard where a guy shared some information about a situation, and at the end of it he said, this is not something that I want to have told around too much. He was saying it on the conference line. So I'm not pointing out anyone's failure there, but at the same time, where are our boundaries? Where are our limits in disclosing information? So, if our churches were able to contain, be that place where people can confide to the ministry, confessions, whatever it might be, and have the trust in their churches, and wouldn't have to question about that, I think our churches could be a lot more effective. They could be a lot more a church that's alive and functioning as a church should. And one example that comes to mind was working with hospitals. A couple months ago, we had one of the hospitals that we deal with had a CEO. I personally knew him, and he very unexpectedly resigned, or was forced to resign. And there was a very obvious a situation. Something had happened. And to this day, I have no idea what was going on. There are board members, there are people involved, there are people I associate with, and I didn't ask. I don't need to know. But I had to ask myself this question: if our churches could contain information like that hospital did, I'm sure, there's the people that need to know what was going on, and they dealt with it accordingly, and another CEO was put into place and all that. But how often do our churches fail in that respect? There's something that's going on, and people are talking about it. And so how do we handle this discrete knowledge if we are in a position as leaders in the church? How do we handle that? How well are we doing? So Why is it so fun to be the first to tell others something? If we're just honest with ourselves, I think we will admit to that you know, we do get a little bit of pleasure out of telling something they hadn't known before or was something new, and that has its place depending on what it is. But if it's at someone else's expense, what are we losing by doing that? That's the questions we need to ask ourselves. So one example in Scripture is in Matthew 17, Barak Zaclaren, Transfiguration. Jesus told his disciples to not tell what they saw till after his resurrection. And we read of multiple accounts in the Bible where Jesus actually told his followers or his disciples to not tell. So even in his ministry, they were dealing with things, they were seeing things where they were asked to keep things confidential. And as leaders, church leaders, or whatever our role is that we're here today, we're here because we're in a position where we deal with things like that. So I've betrayed someone's confidence in me. What do I do now? Admitting failure and apologizing is humbling but necessary. I've had to do that. I just recently had to do that. And it probably hurt me more than anything I've done in a while. And I'll just give the example. It was my 11-year-old son. I have an 11-year-old boy that's prone to doing some unnecessary things occasionally. And I was sharing with another father about a situation that we had. And I'm not going to get into that too much, but what I did is he was telling me about something that they had to work through in their family with his son, and I shared what we had to deal with, a mistake that my son made, you know, and we got to talking about this. And it never crossed my mind what he's going to do. The very next day, my 11-year-old son ran into his boy, and the first thing that boy asked him about is what I had told his dad about. So he comes home and he goes, "Dad, did you tell someone that?" "I'm sorry, but I did." And, you know, that's the kind of thing I have to ask myself, why did it never cross my mind that he would go and tell his son and that would get back and make a full circle around? So how important is it that we use discretion, the things that we communicate with others? If we're sharing discrete information, we're passing something on to someone else, and we're basically placing our integrity into their hands, if you think about it. Because if they go and start telling others, it's going to come back to us. That's where it started off, and it's going to expose who we are, and we were telling stories. So it is very important, if that does happen, and I think a lot of us probably learn the hard way one way or the other, or one time or another, we need to admit our failure. Apologizing is humbling, but it's necessary. We need to do that. We need to make our things right and continue on. And that can also be a way to form, it forms relations. So I have found in my experience that admitting weaknesses to the person we are trying to help is often a vital part of building relations and forming a better understanding of each other's struggles, exactly as it's written down there. And it's just that simple. If we're walking with someone through the valley, as we heard earlier today, if we can identify with some of the struggles that they are dealing with, how much easier is it to communicate? If we're on a pedestal or they feel looked down on or they have someone's assistance who can't connect with them, we're just making it hard for ourselves. So I think it's important that if we're walking with someone through the valley, that we're not too proud to admit our own shortcomings, our own weaknesses, and identify and speak of such. We've been involved with support groups in the past couple of years, actually some years ago now, where where we came together. We met with a couple other couples that were involved for one family situation there. And one thing we did when we started every session is we'd sit down, we actually wrote questions down beforehand. And we used the same questions over a couple of years' time. But we always sat down first and just had a round table discussion, and we just shared what our struggles and our weaknesses are. And that made it so much easier once we got down to the harder things that we really had come together about. We could identify a lot more with the people we were trying to help. So it's important that we do that, that we're open to doing that. But there again, we have to trust the others in the room or at the table, or you know, if it's things that we don't want to have shared, you know, we're placing our trust into their hands, and likewise they're doing the same thing for us. So it causes it's a good way to form relations and understand each other, and that's where healing starts. It's where help starts, and it's beneficial all around. So when is it okay to share discrete knowledge with others? We've all probably run into this. There are situations where things get intense. I know we've been involved with situations where family members have been hurt or have been very distraught or frustrated, and people come and ask questions, or they challenge decisions that were made, or whatever the case might be. Do we have people that we can trust with limited information, or you know, if I've been in situations where I didn't know which way to turn to. I didn't know, you know, I felt it's not sufficient to make our own decisions, you know, and it was a time where I desperately needed other people's input. Do we have people like that in our life that we can turn to? And I like this section here for that reason. If situations are dire, do we have people we can give limited information to and ask them to pray? And the same token, have we been asked to pray by others that are involved in a situation, and they're asking us for that same thing, and that's the person we really want to be? But a mature Christian is willing to lift someone in prayer without needing to know all the juicy details. If I'm involved in a situation, I have people in my life who I know I can go to, and I can say, hey, the struggle is real. Would you be willing to pray? And I know that they will not ask about any additional information. They're not even, they'll say, I can do that. Yes, I want to do that. But they're not going to be asking, so what's going on, you know, and try to find out the whole scoop of the situation. So, and I look at that as a sign of a mature Christian. I'm willing to pray for a situation or a case without having to know all the juicy details. Another time when it is okay to share discreet knowledge with others is if someone is in danger. You know, we get involved in these messy situations occasionally where, Andy referred to suicidal thoughts, you know, things like that. How do we handle this? But I guess I don't have a straight answer on that, but I have been told if someone is still speaking about doing it, they're not an actual threat. Now, don't take that for the gospel, because I'm sure there's exceptions to that. But I have been told as long as someone is still making the threats or is speaking or referring to it, it's not an actual threat. If we are ever in a situation where it feels to us that there is a threat on some, you know, to someone else or to someone's life or whatever, there comes a time where no matter, you know, how discreet or what our involvement is, I think we need to do the right thing. I would hate to live with the burden of having known something and something bad happened and not having done anything about it. So I guess my personal input on that would be, you know, if it feels to us that it's going the wrong way and someone is in danger or someone else's life is in danger, we need to deal with it. So on the same token, we're talking about when is it okay to share discreet knowledge with others. We should maybe also speak about when is it beneficial to not share. A couple things come to mind on this topic. Some people have the gift of just not, they're knowledgeable about something or they find something out or they're involved with something and they just won't say a word to anyone else about it. And some really interesting things have happened with situations like that already where as a result of that, a person was actually able to get help or, his sins were exposed or whatever it might be. One story that comes to mind is one that my dad used to tell us, and I'd like to verify this or, find out where this actually happened. I wasn't able to do it, but I'll just tell it for what it is. But supposedly, there was this farmer one time who raised pigs, and this was years ago where these animals were it was the livelihood of the farm. They were worth a lot of money. And one night, he happened to discover someone breaking into his pig barn. And he actually observed the guy, and he knew who it was. He saw him take off with one of his younger pigs. So this farmer chose to never say a word to anyone about it. He never did. Kept it to himself. He didn't even tell his wife. A couple years later at an auction, the person that this farmer saw stealing his pig came to him and he asked him, "Did you ever find out or hear anything more about that pig that you had stolen?" And this farmer looks at him and he said, "There's only two people that know about that pig, and it's me and you." There's cases like that where it's actually powerful and it's good to not share. Just be quiet about it. And, I know if that would have been me, that would have got my attention pretty hard. We had a similar story told. We have an annual deacons meeting for the Old Order community here in this area. Every January, we have a deacons meeting where some over 200 deacons that are involved with our church fund programs get together. And this is going down the Bunny Trail. As Rich is still here, he might bring his shotgun out. But anyhow, we have a lot of people, and I'll just share what I shared that day. We have a lot of people in this building who are responsible for community funds and finances. I encourage the deacons that day, if you're responsible for your church funds and you're making deposits at the bank, make sure you know what you are depositing. Bank tellers are people like everyone else, and occasionally the temptation might be too real to slip a couple hundreds away. So what happened is we had an incident like that in our community here where a deacon, he knew exactly how much money, it was church alms money for church funds, he was depositing in the bank account. He knew exactly how much he had, but the teller came up short. And the bottom line is the teller had stolen some of it. And if he wouldn't have had his numbers straight, the teller would have gotten away with it. She did not get away with it. Anyhow, I told that story, and I encourage the deacons to make sure if you're depositing church funds, be responsible with that and make sure what exactly you are depositing. So anyhow, afterwards, one of our older deacons, and he's going to have to correct me on this because he's sitting in here today, and I'm not sure I have all the details accurate anymore, but one of our older deacons told us this story, and I made note of this when I was studying for this topic because I really liked what he shared that day. He said years ago he owns a business, and he had some deposits to make, cash and checks, however this was. He knew exactly what he had, but he walks into the bank and deposited the money, and the teller came up short, and he brought it to the teller's attention, and she didn't acknowledge it, and finally he decided not to make a fuss about it. He just left it, walked away, and didn't say a word to nobody. But he said from then on, he just simply avoided that teller. So what happened is after some time, and I forget the dollar amount, it might have been $30 or $50. It wasn't a huge amount if I remember correctly. But anyhow, a couple years later, he walks into the bank to make another deposit, and the other windows were all busy, and it didn't look right to avoid that teller further. So for the first time after the initial incident, he walks back to that teller to make his deposit that day. And that day, his deposit added up to the additional amount what was previously taken. And I like stories like that because he chose to not make a fuss about it. He could have made a fuss about it, could have caused someone to lose their job and all that. But after all that, I'm guessing that teller was helped more by his ability to keep discrete knowledge to himself and what the outcome was afterwards. I'm guessing was more beneficial to them, hopefully spiritually too, than any other outcome could have been. So I enjoy stories like that. So we're involved in a messy situation. How do I handle questions from others? Two people can ask the same questions. Why am I comfortable discussing it with one but not the other? And I'd like a raise of hands on this one. How many people have experienced this scenario where you've been involved with something and two people ask questions and you're totally comfortable to speak with one about it but not the other? How do we explain that? My way of thinking is it's simply the spirits recognize each other, if that makes sense. I like to think there's people I can just sense that I can trust them with discrete knowledge. I can trust them with sharing about a situation. It all comes down to what is the motive of someone asking. So we have these situations where, you know, family might be hurt. You know, people maybe have been manipulated, taken advantage of, whatever the case might be. And you might be a deacon or a support group person or whatever the case might be, and they'll come and they'll want to pump you for some information. It really comes down to the motive. Do you feel that they are asking? What is their motive in asking? Are they truly concerned about the situation? What I found with that is not be too quick to answer, not be too quick to even say anything. A soft answer turns away wrath is what I quoted there. But what I've come to find out is asking frustrated people who might be close to a situation to pray is a great diffuser. And just simply saying, I have done that. I've had people approach me and ask questions that I was not comfortable answering. I did not trust their motive in asking. And I just simply asked them, I said, you know, it's been a very complicated situation. Would you be willing to pray for us that we can make the right decisions? You know, and I have not found a person yet who was not willing to do that. So just sharing that for whatever it's worth. We do have it is a challenge with some of these situations where, people know about it, or you know, it's public information, maybe some of it, and people, it really comes down to Andy's topic again on compassion and mercy and all that. I'll just share something that I observed here recently. I have a next door neighbor that has a chicken house. And they were wanting to take a vacation, and their chickens were about 4 weeks old. So he asked me one day, he said, is there any chance you'd be interested in feeding our chickens while we're going and taking care of the chicken house? Well, I happen to enjoy that, and I gladly did that for them. But one thing I observed is, you know, I'd go over there in the morning and again in the evening, and I'd walk, make my circle through the chicken. I'm sure there's more people here that have chicken houses or taking care of chickens, you know, and So walking through there, I observed this one day. Occasionally there'd be a chicken that's down. And typically if they were down, they were on their back and they were stretching with their neck to try to get up. And one thing I noticed is other chickens did not hesitate to walk right over top of them. Now, one thing that came to mind looking at that is when God created the chicken, he was thinking, you know, chicken tenders, chicken to eat. He was not creating a bird with a whole lot of brains. That was kind of the thinking I had on this. And I'd observe this. I'd see these chickens walking over top of one that was down, and occasionally they'd even stop and pick at it, things like that. And it was quite annoying, to say the least. You know, it kind of bothered me, but I took it as, well, that's just the way that chickens are. So while I was thinking about this, I overheard a conversation about a situation in our community, and a couple of people were just really going at it. I mean, they were critical, they were judgmental about the whole situation. They had very strong vocal opinions about what was going on, and the light just came on in my head. We're really not a whole lot different than what those chickens were. Do we kick the ones that are down? Do we walk right over top of them? You know, or do we have that? Are we willing to walk with someone? Are we willing to extend that helping hand? Walk through the valley, as we heard. You know, things like that. So let's be that person. If we know a situation or we know of someone that's struggling, it is our responsibility as deacons, as leaders in the church, especially to, you know, let's not just sit back and see what happens. Let's offer that helping hand while someone's down. Let's do it while, how much easier is it before it gets much worse? If we see the need, let's just do it. It's always, there's an element of human nature there of wanting to know, and there's, yeah, for myself, that's one of the bigger challenges I've had with being involved in situations like that, is just simply knowing what to say sometimes when people ask questions or are trying to insert themselves or, you know, in some cases maybe force their opinion on what should be done and all the everything that goes with that. People with spiritual, emotional, and financial difficulties are often defensive and manipulative. How do I avoid getting involved in their situation to their advantage? One thing I've learned already is, and I've learned this the hard way, but anytime a person tells me that I'm the only one that they'll tell me, you're the only one that I'll talk to about this, I get very uneasy. And I'll explain you a little bit why that is. I was involved some years ago in I worked for a lumber company for the first 26 years of my working career. And I spent quite a bit of those years buying gatewood logs from loggers. So I had this one customer. Every time, and the way this works is these guys that would bring in gatewood logs, they would buy their own timber, then they'd sort it, and they'd sell it to the mills that they would expect they could get the most money from. So there was always an incentive to try to manipulate me as the log buyer into paying them more for their logs. So I had this one guy, he'd come in, and I'd unload his logs, and I'd set up to scale them, and he'd have to walk with me every step of the way. And he was one of those people who he'd get too close to me, if anyone can relate to that. We have our comfort zone around us, and if someone steps into that, I'll take a step back. So if you can envision this, I'd be scaling his logs. I'd take a step one way, and he'd take a step one way, and we'd be too close together again. I'd take another step back, and that's how we kept doing it. And he'd always kept coming up against me like this, and with his elbow, he'd say, between me, you, and that fence post over there. And he'd tell me this stuff that nobody else knew. And I finally took to seeing through this. He's doing this to manipulate me in with knowledge where he's thinking it's to his advantage. I might be willing to pay him a little bit more for his logs. Well, this kept going on and on, and we got to know each other quite well. And I can honestly say to this day that he was never favored in what he got paid for his logs. But anyhow, I quit that job, started another career, and one day I got an email from a former coworker, and it was a news article about this person. And here, he had been charged of a horrific crime, and he's probably spending the rest of his life in prison. And I was haunted by that for quite a while. He had innocent victims in what his crime was. I won't get into that. But between you, me, and the fence post, how often, if people try to manipulate you with information or they make you feel like you're the only one, I have found myself in that situation since that, but it always raises red flags. What is really going on if someone is not able to, you know, speak with others or share with others, or why make someone feel like you're the only one that they're talking to? So I would just encourage you, if you're ever involved in a difficult situation and a person keeps playing that line, be careful. If someone is using that approach that you're the only one that they'll talk to, be careful. So it's what I got out of that. It's good to continually remind ourselves that we are part of a church structure, and therefore we're accountable to the church. And that's one thing that's a vital part of who we identify as Anabaptist churches. We're part of a church structure. We're accountable to that. And let's be careful we don't get manipulated or talked into doing something to someone else's benefit that we're actually trying to help. So, you know, people struggling with spiritual, emotional, and financial difficulties, usually persuasive, you know, defensive, manipulative, they didn't get to that place in one day, and they've learned a lot of the wrong things to know that got them into where they're at to start with. And we just need to be careful. And it's good to, if we are involved in a situation like that, to, you know, have a support structure behind us, have the church ministry or you know, be accountable to someone and have someone have our back is what I'm trying to say there. So I had another situation once. I made note of this, and I think I got enough time that I'll share it. And this is something I'm going to very vaguely describe it so as not to disclose where this concerned. I will say this right off the bat. This did not happen in our church. But I did get a phone call one day from a guy, and he was asking if I'd be willing to sit down and listen to a situation that was unfolding. There was a large amount of money involved, and it was a dispute. And this is what he said. He said, "We don't want to make a bigger fuss out of this than it already is. We don't want to have the community or the church in the know or involved or anything like that." And we agreed, as the two parties, we agreed to reach out and have another person listen to both sides of this. And I'm just sharing this as something. If you're ever involved with something like this, I don't want to come across as having the answers or putting myself on a pedestal or anything like that here. I'm sharing this. We're here today to sharpen the axe, as we heard. We're here to learn and you know, acquire the tools that, and that's the spirit I want to share this with. And they said, we picked your name. You're the one that we decided to ask to listen to both sides of this. Would you be willing to do that? And I said, I want a little bit of time to think about this before I agree to that. And I had to think of Matthew 18, you know, if a brother has, you know, if there's contention, you know, speak to a brother alone. If not, if you can't resolve, you know, take another one with you. And if not, you know, take it to... So after giving it some thought, I told them, this is what we'll do if you will agree to this. I said, I'm willing to do this, and if it can be resolved, that's great. That's what we're hoping for. But if it's still not resolved, the only way I'll agree to this was with the stipulation that I have the right then to go to your ministry and speak with them about it. And all honor and glory to God for giving me that thought or that insight. No credit to my own there. But that's what we did. We agreed to that. So we did sit down, and they both, I spoke with them separately, I spoke with them together, and we formulated a plan, and we still couldn't agree. So I reminded them what the agreement was. If we can't get to somewhere where you can agree on, you know, I do have the the right here. You did agree to that I will speak to your ministry that. And reminded them of that. So later, we just shelved it for that time. So I went to the one party and I said, would you be willing? And I laid out a plan that had come to mind. I went to the other party and I asked them the same way. They both had to give a little. And you know, the end of it, they both agreed to that. And that's exactly what happened. It got resolved. As far as I know, we're all friends today. This happened some years ago already. As far as I know, it's completely resolved and everyone's friends today. But that's the type of thing where, you know, there's a whole story there that could be told or shared and people would form opinions on. It got resolved with three people knowing about it. And that's, we need more of that. We need people to communicate better, to speak with each other on a basis where there's a plan. We heard about effective meetings. I was so agreed with a lot of the points that were pointed out there and what, you know, what needs to be discussed, what is the plan. You know, there's so many things like that I think we could do better as a church community, Anabaptist people group that we are, to simply communicate better and you know, have scripture as the basis and have get direction where we need it and resolve something like that. So in that case, it did actually work to agree to speak with someone as the only one, but I did do it with the stipulation, if we can't resolve it, we will go to the ministry. And there again, you know, what is it worth to have part of a church structure where we can have that? So my final point here, I recently walked into a business, and the business owner saw me come in the door, and he motioned me to walk with him to a back room. And he said, I can't believe you just walked in this door. He said, I know you've had some experience in a very difficult situation. He said, I'm in the middle of something where I don't know which way to go to, and I just need someone to talk to. And the comment was made in that conversation, this person is involved in a support group that has a lot of challenges. And he said, we need a support group for our support group. And the sad thing was that the church ministry that had appointed them to get involved had actually turned against them because of the situation they were trying to help. The person was very persuasive and manipulative and all that, and the minister had actually turned against the support group that had been appointed to help. And that is a very sad thing. But we do have these cases like that. So if you're involved, and we heard this already, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but if we're involved in a situation like that and we need support, don't hesitate to reach out and get it. We do have these situations get very intense and it's necessary. So I like to think of my support group. Who is our support group? I'm going to call it who is my support group. I have a spouse that I can trust with anything I tell her. And if everyone else is turned against me and my spouse is in my corner, I've got all I need. The ministry. I'm part of a ministry. If things get very complicated, I have people in our ministry who I have full confidence in talking with, speaking with, asking for advice, very valuable. Others with experience that we can trust. I can just, the situation I just described where a guy asked me to speak, you know, reaching out to others with same experience, very valuable. I'm not going to expound on that. The last one, it's the one I'm hoping to end on. The author of our faith, that was clearly explained this morning. I like to use the term author because if we read a book, there's an author for it. If we study the Bible, if we read the Bible, we know who the author is. That needs to be our primary support group. And ironically, my closing verse is the first one that Ray shared this morning, and it just speaks to me every time. And I'm going to end with that. I want to... thank everyone again for coming out. Let's stand together. Let's help each other. We're all here to, you know, what is a church? A church is a group of people helping each other get to heaven. So the situations we get involved with, a verse of encouragement for me is what I'm going to close with. And this is found in 2 Chronicles 16:9. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to shew himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. God bless.